Golf's no different from hockey. Requires talent, self-discipline.
Golf requires goofy pants and a fat ass. You should talk to my neighbor, the accountant, probably a great golfer, huge ass.
How do you measure yourself with other golfers?
By height.
It's a very, very special honor.
I'm Paula Creamer, and you're listening.
Well, we're waiting.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, a.k.a. John Kreese from Cobra Kai. And you're listening to...
Quiet, please.
Sorry. Let the word go out from here across the land that Danny Noonan approved.
Hiya, boys. Nice day for golf, eh?
Quiet, please. Oh, you got secrets, eh?
Hey, this is Shooter McGavin. You're listening to the...
Hey, you guys. Hey, we're trying to have a podcast over here.
Is Anthony Kim technically challenged?
Yes.
He finally broke par with a 65 on LIV this week. And it's reported by Four Play's Dan Rapport that he literally does not know how to use a TrackMan, nor does he know how to drop a golf ball at knee height. He can, and folks, I'm telling you, he was dropping a few golf balls over the last few weeks. We got that. We have a couple other topics, most notably Lydia Ko. Doing Lydia Ko things. She's knocked off another victory. She finds herself on the verge of immortality in the LPGA Hall of Fame. Scottie Scheffler traveling down to Florida. We'll be chatting about Bay Hill and his playing, especially after the 11th hole on Saturday. And you can't talk destination and travel golf without talking about what Ben Cohen Dewar has done with the Cabot Golf Properties. And what I'm speaking of is obviously, if you've not seen that, you have, first of all, you'd have to be under a rock. But Cabot, Great Britain, amazing. They follow that up with Cabot St. Lucia with the Core Crenshaw. Maybe the best golf course, most beautiful golf course in the world with some of the cliffs that they play on in St. Lucia. But we are talking Cabot, Citrus Farm, on the former grounds of World Woods down in Brookville. And we are fortunate to have the man himself, the general manager, David Bennett. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Excited to have a little chat with you guys. I was more excited about the Anthony Kim stuff, but Cabot's doing some pretty cool things too.
Oh, we can't wait for your insight on that.
And rounding out our panel,
I've got some.
Rounding out our panel, you've already heard him. He is Mr. Little Linksters, as well as the noted golf course author now, right?
No, I'm getting there.
Publicist. Dude, you're on PGA.com. You're everywhere nowadays.
Yeah.
Brendan Elliott.
Thank you.
And also joining us, noted golf course photographer, Cy Sear, whose background includes 15 years on Golf Channel, USGA, PGA Tour, and he was shooting shots at a little place called Bay Hill this past weekend, in fact. So, Cy, thank you for rounding out the panel.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Before we jump to those other topics I talked about, let's talk the most pressing thing everybody's talking in golf, Netflix. Who's watched it?
Seen it all. I know you have, AD. What about
I
you?
Have. I've made it through, I think the last episode I saw was maybe the Fitzpatrick boys.
Yeah.
So I may be four in.
Okay. Sorry.
I saw it, and I also saw myself in it. I'm actually episode one.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I got to go back now.
You do have to go back.
Which episode are you in?
The first one. Okay. Season two, episode one.
It's like an Easter egg.
It's like a hidden Mickey.
Yeah.
Right. Go well, back, Brandon. You'll see me.
You can't just say that. You got to set the scene. Which scene are we?
So they were filming with Dude Perfect. Rory was filming Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was on set for that.
Nice.
And then I was asked to take a couple of headshots of Rory, and then they showed the back of my head, and then I was in the background and a couple of other shots, but it was cool. Yeah. Some friends started texting me, and at one time I actually walked straight across the frame, looking into the Netflix camera randomly, because you're always looking, your head's on a swivel when you're on a film set like that. So you don't want to shoot or you don't want to be on TV. So you're always seeing where the cameras are, and I missed I missed on that one. I don't know why they included it.
Well, we won't ruin the entire thing for David, but overall, guys, what's your feedback on it?
I tell you, I wrote a piece for a new website I'm writing for.
Shameless plug. Go ahead.
Yeah, almost average golf. There's some YouTubers and Instagrammers, but they're starting this media thing, a la some football websites and other stuff they've done, and it's free flowing. I'm allowed to say whatever I want, which is unlike any other publication I write for. And I talked about, you know, this new world that we all live in, and how it's great to see the behind the scenes and get to know the personalities of these guys. But at the same time, you know, how intrusive it is too. I mean, God forbid, you know, Jack Nicklaus or Arnold Palmer or any of those guys back in the day had social media or camera crews following them around for a TV show. And so I had mixed emotions before season two, but I absolutely loved it. And again, I'm not going to have any spoilers since David's only made it through a couple episodes, but
yeah, that's my fault.
There's some fantastic stories. The one you said you got up through the Fitzpatrick boys, that was awesome.
And what a great thing for Alex. I mean, yeah. I mean his display last year at the Open Championship was amazing, and how Maddie's given him some opportunities and trying to help him along. So
yeah. I honestly I thought Netflix got better on this one. I thought the first season was weird as they kept jumping back to Southern Hills, and it had no, as a golfer, you knew it was just kind of weird the way they kind of played out the stories. But this one, I thought they were actually much more concise and on point with the kind of the play out. And I got to be honest, the Joel Damon one was pretty interesting to me, just because going full circle, right? I mean, Netflix explodes him, makes him who he was, and makes all this money for him. And then it actually, you know, of course, counter turns him into a tailspin. And you kind of left that episode feeling like, man, do I really like Joel Damon? And then at the end, they get together with his caddy and they have their little scene on the plane. And now I was like, oh, wait, I do like Joel Damon again, right? So it kind of rode every roller coaster. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, the people's champion. You're absolutely. And what was what I found interesting, I think what you're basically alluding to, is the last go round, they focused on one person for the entire show. I like how they weaved the different people at different times into each episode this time.
Yeah, because I think they got some more buy-in, right, from some of the top players.
Yep.
Which I felt like, you know, Rory was on board and a few of the other guys. So it didn't feel like they had to avoid him like it felt like last time. And I felt like it was really kind of a comprehensive look. I agree with you there.
And look, the PGA of America.
I think it's kind of cool.
Go ahead, Si.
I think it's kind of cool that, you know, being a golfer and golf consumer, we're talking about jumping back and forth. Like the average golfer knows when that was filmed. So it was kind of cool to see it bounce around a little bit.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
The Ryder Cup stuff is fascinating, with actually being in the room with Zach and the other guys when they're on the phone. And I'm not going to spoil it, but that is just, it's just surreal to be there and to have him making the phone calls and seeing the emotion on both sides. But you know, the PGA of America has kind of backed this quite a bit and pushed it out there. And, you know, there could be some backlash on people being critical of the whole process of picking the teams. You know, I don't envy Zach Johnson or any captain for that matter on how the process is now with those six picks. But there was been a lot of chatter with people that have watched it and written about, you know, potential good old boys club and stuff. But look. It's hard. It's got to be hard to pick a team that's cohesive and can go out there and win a cup.
Well, David. Well, actually, I shouldn't ask you. You haven't gotten to that episode yet. You're right, B. I should say, is it chemistry or is it who's the hot player at this time? That's the ultimate question. And having had Keegan's father on here around that exact time, a PGA Life member, we got a little inside look into how gut-wrenching that process was for Keegan.
Yeah, but I'll give you guys a little side note. I'm a fellow Vermonter, so Keegan and I I didn't know him growing up, but there's probably not too many golf professionals that came from Vermont.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you that when I sent that invite. I don't know, invite over to you. I don't know if you noticed that. I was gave a shout out to the 802.
I'm a there native you go. Vermonter. I did.
Yeah, Burlington, Vermont.
Let's go. Well, yeah, here we are.
You got Cy from Maine.
You got Maine. Wow. We got Vermont.
Upstate New York.
Oh, here we go, boys. We're in a good show here.
You got a 4 out of Vermont. Vermont representing.
Absolutely.
It's a golf mecca, let's be real.
Well, you were up at Jay Peak, though. Well, I don't want to diverge from our little show notes, but
keep going.
I usually don't have show notes, but you were up at Jay Peak and a couple of properties up there before.
I was up in Stowe, Vermont, and in the country club of Vermont. Yeah. So, yeah, that's where I grew up.
Excellent.
I don't want a sidebar. I'm into this Netflix show.
So, B, Siskel and Ebert, thumbs up, thumbs down?
Oh, definitely 2 thumbs up. This was really good. And like David said, I think the first season kind of set the table, but it was kind of odd. Nobody really knew what to expect. But this season, just the intertwining of stuff, like you said, David, is just so much better than, you know, chopping things up the way they did in season one. And again, this is the kind of stuff, especially right now with everything that's been going on in the world of golf. This is the type of stuff that the PGA Tour needs to do, is showcase these guys and show the personalities and show what they go through. I mean, last season with Brooks, I said last week, Alan, that I wasn't a Brooks fan before season one, and, you know, seeing how much it really means to him and how, you know, the decisions he made, why he made those decisions, you can, at least I could justify it at that point. So I love the show.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Cy, thumbs up.
Just great for the game.
First Absolutely. Episode was best though, right? All right.
You know, one final thought to tie that one up. I mean, I feel like the PGA Tour, remember Inside the PGA Tour was a show back in the day. I don't understand why we can't get more of this on a regular basis, why we have to wait for a whole season to come out, right? It feels like that is the, should be the kind of linchpin that ties Monday to Thursday together of getting some insight of the last tournament that was played. I know the editing takes time and what have you, but that's what golf is engaged. You know, we need that engagement and we need those people to understand those storylines. And that's what makes this more popular. So I just wish we got more of it. I thought it was amazing, but I wish we got more of it.
I agree. It was good theater. Good theater was also over at Bay Hill in Orlando. Tremendous tournament this week. I was watching, I think I got more of Saturday's round than Sunday. But when you're watching the round on Saturday, and it's at 1.7 players, I think we're sitting at 7 under par.
Yeah.
It before, you know, and even then they didn't distance themselves technically until Scottie Scheffler just 11th hole cursed himself out. And I can't even remember how many birdies he made down the stretch on Saturday, and Sunday was just, he was in fuego. But so I'm going to lean on you. Your boots on the ground. You had your camera in hand. Official photographer of the event this week?
Yeah, I was the tournament photographer for Arnold Palmer Invitational for the first time ever. I've been there a bunch of times for Golf Channel, NBC Sports. It was just cool to be there. I had photographed Mr. Palmer many times. I photographed his funeral. There's just a lot of great people involved at API, and it was just an honor to be there. But it was cool. It was really cool to be there. Yeah.
David, did you make it out there?
No, I didn't get there. I've got my hands full right now. I got this golf course I got to operate. But I got to watch a little bit of it on TV. And I mean, I think the takeaway obviously was Scotty finding his putting. I mean, that's a problem if you're a PGA Tour player.
Yep.
That's a real problem. And it was interesting. He talked about, you know, freeing it up and not using his line and kind of more just kind of putting with no line. And I thought that's a great takeaway for a lot of people out there. I think the line is so prevalent these days, lining up your golf ball. But for some people, when you're too technical and you get too deep into it, just getting look at nothing down there makes it more instinctual again. So I thought that was a pretty cool takeaway.
On the other side of that, Brendan, how about Rory? Rory was on the putting green nonstop. He was lost, it seemed, out there.
No, it's crazy because I think it was last year he was working with Faxon on trying to do the same type of thing that David was talking about not getting so entrenched in the line and the technical aspects and just, you know, going out there and being childlike and just putting the golf ball. And too many guys just get handcuffed by the technicalities of the stroke. And that can lead down a rabbit hole that you don't want to get down. And, you know, it comes down to a feeling, in my opinion. The technique has to be there, but it has to come down to a feeling and a confidence that you need to have.
Do you guys think it's tied to the TrackMan stuff? I mean, I think guys are so technical these days. They grew up on TrackMan. They grew up with all the data. That getting over a putt and just not thinking about anything is so hard for them to do because they know what makes a perfect stroke now, right? I mean, it's not a guess. And I think, you know, I'm not old. I'm 45. But, I mean, that technology wasn't anywhere near us when we were growing up. So it was like, oh, you just putt the golf ball. Then it was a big deal when Tiger introduced everyone with a Sharpie line on the golf ball, right? I was like, oh, man, now we're cheating. And now it's like, no, we know launch angle of a putt. We know spin, you know, like we know everything about a putt. And I think that you could just see sometimes you got to be hard, man, when you have that info to not care.
Absolutely.
And just free it up.
It's a double-edged sword, I feel like, that the numbers are good to have, but you need to be able to make it something that's applicable to your game and that you can carry over into how are you going to use those numbers and not just get too buried down into it.
Yeah, it's true.
David, to your point, though, the rest of the PGA Tour has got to be just shaking. I mean, statistically, the year that he had last year and ball striking doesn't seem to be backing off of that. And if he's found his stroke, it could be a very bad year for everybody else out on the tour.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the video, just to kind of take one step back. Like when the video technology came out, if they saw shot at Scottie Scheffler's foot action in video, I mean, he would have never made it past Ledbetter's first lesson. Right. I mean, it would have been like, nope, that ain't going to work. And now he's number one player, best ball striker since Tiger. Like, how is that possible?
Right.
I mean, that golf swing is just, mind-boggling. What did that look like in person, Si? I haven't seen it in person yet.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw it in person. It's just, you know, you see it on video and you think it's crazy, and it is wild in person, you know.
Yeah.
So, Si, what was the coolest shot you got this weekend?
I actually spent like an hour with Scotty after that last putt dropped and he won. You know, like there's commitments that he had, and as the tournament photographer you just stick with him. It was cool. He's just a very humble, nice guy.
So were you in the presser, which I got to touch on, you were in the presser where he sits there and says, don't be mad at us. People in the golf, and if people that enjoy golf want to be mad at anybody, be mad at the live players who broke the camel's back and departed us.
I was not in the room, but I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah. BE, would you like to chime in? I think Si's being political on that one. I agree with him. I'm just going to say, I agree with him completely. He's
no, correct. I agree with him. And I don't know if you're segueing yet, but.
No, not yet.
Okay. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear any of his comments after the event.
The question was posed to him about the riff, obviously, in professional golf. And his comment back immediately, he didn't miss a beat, was, if the golf fans want to be upset at the guys that left. We didn't go anywhere. The product is still here. And he's 1,000% correct in that regard. Yeah. They're the ones that chose to cause a riff, and then they want to come back and obviously play in it, which who would not want to see Cam Smith, Brooks Koepka, and all those guys back out playing every single time? And that's why I think – personally, that's why I'm so looking forward to the majors again, because you're going to get to see those guys. So, but I agree with him.
It's just a matter of time that they'll all be back together. I mean, we don't have Andy with us to do the official live report, but seems like things are picking up in that direction, that something soon will be revealed, I think.
Well, what's interesting is now that they basically have announced that they're not going to pursue World ranking points.
Right.
And what do you have? Everybody's over in Asia trying to get world ranking points to be able to play in, play in the majors. But anyway, if you're going to travel down south to go to the Bay Hill, you might as well go to Cabot Citrus Farm. And yeah, there's my segue, Brendan.
Nice.
Yes. Missed that point earlier. Hey, David, you turn back the clock. Let's go. Let's World Woods was the old property that this, that the golf course is built on. You had two golf courses there. You can fill us in a little bit better. That in itself was a top 100 property. Yeah. Before Cabot started building every thing you're there, I think Golf Digest actually named it the most anticipated opening of the year. Before we hit record, you were talking about the merge. I just want to sit back and have you just describe what Kyle Franz and Mike Nunza had done. It's remarkable. I mean, the pictures coming out of that place are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's such a cool part. So proud to be a part of it, to be quite frank with you. But, you know, the story of Cabot is really about Ben Cowan-Dewar, who, you know, kind of started up in Cape Breton, and his vision of kind of getting these properties that are in the best locations and putting the guest golf courses on them is really what Cabot is all about. And it's kind of, you know, over a 10-year period, he put together some of the greatest golf in the, you know, in that upper Atlantic that you'll ever see. And Cape Breton became wildly successful. And through the, you know, that support of people who had backed him then and now are backing him today, you know, we were able to expand to Cabot Citrus Farms. And honestly, it's kind of the same recipe. You know, find this incredible piece of property, which World Woods was, as you mentioned, it was a top 100 golf course in at that time. And, you know, I think some people would have thought it was crazy to tear that apart and start over. But the topography and the land there is what makes that place so unique. Nowhere in Florida do you see rolling terrain and sand, and you've got topography with oak trees and pine trees. It looks like almost South Carolina in a Florida setting, to be quite honest with you. And then Kyle Franz, the mad scientist with Mike Nuzzo. I mean, those two are, you know, some of the best up and coming minds. You know, they've been around for the book for many, many years, but to do this on their own now, for Kyle to come out with Carew, is just absolutely genius work. To see the way he naturally played in the terrain and rerouted that golf course is just come out with wild reviews. And then we've got kind of the technology piece of this TrackMan range. We've got the short format with the 9-hole squeeze, and then we've got 11-hole lit par 3. So, you know, what Cabot did was, you know, get this incredible property, put these incredible architects on it, then deliver the technology, the short course, the par 3, the nighttime experience with an unbelievable 18-hole. It's the recipe for the perfect golf future, right? And that's what is so exciting about this property and Cabot. And, you know, what it started has just been preview play after preview play. We are sold out the moment we hit go. And it doesn't seem to be stopping, which we're pretty excited about. And, you know, like I said, those three courses now, one more golf course coming, for now, the Roost, which is going to be in September, and, we'll be off and flying.
I played some golf over in that area many years ago, but it's rolling terrain, high, vast bunkers. It's spectacular in the fact of the, just the contrast between the bunkers and the layout itself.
Yeah.
You had mentioned, but paint the picture. If you're a guest coming there, first of all, how far out are you booked out at this point? Pretty much.
Well, I mean, we've built lodging, and the lodging is in the form of cottages. Okay. Right now we've got 36 that are under construction. In fact, our first cottage is going to open on Monday. And so it's pretty exciting. We're going to have 4-bedroom and 2-bedroom combinations of cottages that will provide us with about 90 beds to start. We're going to build another 34. And so over the course of the project, we'll be about 330 beds on site, all in these beautiful cottages, individual master, you know, rooms with their own ensuite bath, common living areas, all walking. So once you're on site, you're on site. You can get to everything you need to get to. So for a guest, I mean, getting there and booking, I mean, you're talking about flying into Tampa or driving to the area. And now we've got a toll road that goes directly from Tampa right up to the property. It takes about 50 minutes. So, you know, World Woods is no longer kind of, you know, seen as this in the middle of nowhere. Now it's Cabot that's 50 minutes from the airport.
Right.
You know, I flew back in the other day, and it's an hour and 2 minutes from the time I got out of my seat on the plane to the property, which was you know, pretty cool. And so, you know, booking either on property or booking directly through the website is an option. We're kind of pushing our tee times until September right now. Then we're going to do our grand opening on September 30th. That's when both golf courses will be fully open and running. But the best way to do it is to get right now onto our system, get in the wait list, and then we'll notify you, your friends at Notify.
Yes, my friends over at Notify.
It's a platform.
Jake Gordon.
Yeah, shout out to those guys. I mean, when we opened the preview play, we had a backlog of about 5,000 people trying to get a tee time. So it was pretty cool. As soon as the tee time opens, it's gobbled up. And so that's the best way to go about it right now.
Would you consider it almost Pine Valley-esque in how the bunkering and the contrast? I mean, I know that's high standards.
I've never played Pine Valley, but I would say, you know, we're going to, I think a lot of people have almost compared it to a Royal Melbourne, if you will, because it's going to play fast, firm. It's going to have the beautiful part out there is you're not going to lose golf balls, right? So you've got these unbelievable split fairways in many instances where if you hit it one way or the other, you're going to have a shot, you're going to have a swing, but you hit it to these complex greens that you may not have an angle that can get anywhere near the hole, and you can hit it on a green and have no chance to two putt, like no chance. I mean, it's not a guarantee, hit it on a fairway, hit it on the green, two putt, get out of there par. It's no, you've got these wide fairways where you've got to hit the right angle to get tack a flag. And if you don't, fine, you're going to have a swing, you're going to have a shot, but you won't score well. And so the average player will play great. I mean, they'll be able to get around it. You can run the ball up, but the better player is going to sit there and go, my gosh, I mean, I didn't miss a fairway today and I still shot, you know, higher than I thought. Right. So I think that's what makes it really, really unique. And the bunkering is spectacular. Just to have that terrain and that kind of contrast of flow. It's really neat. Yeah. But I don't know about Pine Valley. I mean, you tell me. Well, I played
Pine Valley, and in the great Babe Ruth quote, you know, I just wanted to find my way back to the golf course. So yeah. It was a rough experience. I birdied number one though. I got that good
for me. Well, you were screwed then.
yeah
turn around, man. Go back, Alan. I mean, just turn around. I had an experience out there the other day. We had a gentleman and his brother who were looking at a piece of real estate out there to buy one of the cottages. And I was playing with him in the first hole, literally hoops it on the first for two, par four. And I was like, all right, it's done. Let's just go in. Sold.
So as a person that brokers golf courses, how easy of a real estate sale was that at that afternoon?
That's as good as it gets, right? And that's like, all right, let's just make sure we don't mess the next 4 hours up. But no, it was cool. And
you touched on the next question I was going to ask. Is there a real estate component people can purchase? Because yeah. I've seen that at St. Lucia, that they're going to be doing that at Cabot Citrus Farms as well.
Yeah. So what's interesting is, you know, Cabot's got a variety of properties now, right? They do have St. Lucia. They have Revelstoke, which is up in Canada, coming in 2025. They've got Castle Stewart in Scotland, another Tom Doak course they're putting in. And each property is kind of unique as it plays into real estate and golf. With Citrus Farms, there is real estate tied to it. We've got a ton of acreage out there. So we've got about 600 undeveloped acres right now. We just acquired another couple hundred acres. And so we've got entitlement for upwards of 1700 home sites out there. That's not going to be on the golf course at all. But what it does is it allows us to kind of uniquely situate these homes in the right opportunities for people to either have a permanent home there or a rental property there. So, we will, those cottages that we spoke of, the 70, those are individually sold and could be put back in a rental program if they choose to. And then there'll be individual home sites as well down the road. So yes, real estate's prevalent. In St. Lucia, the real estate went so crazy that ended up becoming a private club. So St. Lucia is going to be a private, but Citrus Farms will be public, and we're proud to support the community in that sense. It's a big part of what Ben and the team at Cabot believe in. It's what we believe in. And so you've got, you know, right now we're up to 140 employees on site. We'll push to close to 500 by the time the property's done, and it's all local. So really, really cool to see this community, which Brooksville is not a large community, about 8,000 people. Yeah. we'll be the largest employer in Hernando County by the time we're done there. So pretty cool. And I'm really proud of that. And that's what, you know, honestly, the secret sauce at Cabot is, yes, the golf courses are spectacular and the properties are amazing, but the people behind it are extraordinary. And that's what I think makes us, you know, especially as a PGA professional, like that being treated the way employees should be treated, the way guests should be treated. You know, that's what makes or breaks a property, you know, because people play it once, they'll think, oh, this is cool. But how they're treated will make them come back to A, this property, or B, another Cabot property down the road. So that's the big push. And I think what will be the lasting legacy there.
Si?
Hey, David, can you talk about that logo?
Yeah. So this is so we've got a team and I got to be honest. I mean, you know, sometimes the simplest logos are the best logos. And I was saying earlier is I cannot believe in Florida, nobody has taken this tangerine and it has popped. And so, you know, the logo stands out. It's true to the property. It's true to the state. It's true to a lot of things. It also is really cool because it's very similar to the emoji in Apple. And so when you type in a little orange or tangerine, you can just bombard people. So I love bombarding people with some tangerines on the text chain. But, you know, we've got a logo on the, we've got the squeeze, which has kind of got like a little drink, a little straw coming out of it. We've got the wedge, obviously, for the par three, which is an orange wedge. And then we've got Karoo right now. I won't tell you about what Roost is going to be yet, but because that's coming in a couple of weeks. But my gosh, I mean, I've been around golf a long time. I've never seen the amount of merchandise go out of a small shop that we've seen at Citrus so far. It's really, really cool to see the support and the support online. Really, really neat to see how many people have reacted to the pictures, to the Instagram posts, to, you know, we Grant Horvat out and he did, you know, gosh, yep. What's that, 400,000 views. I mean, that's just incredible. So thankful for the fake folks that are super into it. It's pretty neat.
So my question is this the recipe for golf going forward? These, maybe not just destination, but having something for everybody. Like you talked about the wedge, you talked about the experience on the range, even Pinehurst has Alan's favorite little short course up there. Is that what we need to do is a golf community, people that work in the industry to really keep growing the game?
I mean, personally, I think yes. I mean, I think that's what's going to make a property really, really successful, because you can cater to everyone. You can cater to the person who has, you know, I say it like, if you want, we have an unbelievable acre putting course, like kind of push after the Himalayas in Scotland. And it's basically, you got 10 minutes, go do that. You got 45 minutes, go play the wedge. You got an hour and a half, go play the squeeze. You got, you know, some time on the TrackMan range. You got 4 hours, go play Karoo. And people are looking for options on time, on ability, on accessibility, juniors, seniors, you name it, right? It's there. And to be able to come to a property like that and spend 2 or 3 days, it's not just about, you know, 36 holes of 18 hole golf courses, right? Where you're just beating yourself to death. It's go play 18, go hang out, have a beer, have a bit of lunch, then go play another emergency nine with your buddies, a match play course, like squeeze. It's a perfect course. You just go out with your friends, play a match to settle a bet, right? You don't have to tee it up from a specific tee box, just throw it down a la, you know, hoopy or something, but it, you know, do that. And then it's all of a sudden you have some dinner, you're hanging around with your buddies at the cottages, you've had a few more pops and it's like, hey, let's start some smack and go play the wedge under the lights. I mean, are you kidding me? It's like golf wonderland, right? So, yeah, I mean, that's the mecca, is you do all three in the same day yeah, it takes a lot of funding, right? So it's easier said than done. And we're fortunate that we've had that. But if people can do it, I think this is the recipe.
Yeah, I mean, Brendan touched on it. It was the original. I mean, the cradle up in Pinehurst. But you guys took it to another level, put it under the lights. Yeah. The guys could stay on property, continue to enjoy the property and what have you. And I think, and this is right up Si's alley, whoever took that picture encompassing people standing on the back of a green with all the fire pits that's right on your website. Yeah. That's the future of golf. People want to have that relaxed. Yep. People work hard enough. They want that relax when they go on their golf trip with their boys. You know, they want to relax and enjoy themselves, have a few pops. And,
Yeah. It's interesting because we've been talking a lot about, you know, we've got to build these food and beverage outlets. And we've got to build all these buildings to get the capacity that we're going to have. But the most popular place is the porch. And what the porch is to us is just a, it's a beautiful little plateau that sits up above and looks out over the squeeze and the wedge and the putting green. And we've just got some couches up there, some fire pits, a pizza truck and a beverage jeep. And I can't get people to leave there. I don't want to leave there. You know, sunset comes down, lights go on, and it's just like, man, what do I do? I guess I got to get back to my cottage, which is 100 feet away. <That's it. laughs> I can do this. It's downhill too, in case we need to roll you. So, all right.
Hey, to throw it over to you. I mean, you've traveled the world with golf courses, shooting golf courses. I mean, you probably pick out those little idiosyncrasies of every property. Are you seeing that same thing with this more relaxed type atmosphere and
yeah, it's a lifestyle. I haven't been to a Cabot property, but it's really a lifestyle, isn't it? I mean, it's a beautiful spot. People often think or overthink golf.
Yeah.
You know, it is a business, but geez, people just want to break from their life and just enjoy a fire, you know, and 4 hours with their buddies. Like, it's not very hard, you know, like just give the people what they want, you know, that's why Cabot and all these great places are so successful. They figured it out, you know.
Well, I've said all along that when golf finds its new realignment, you're going to have the high end privates that are going to be immune to any downturns in the economy. You're going to have daily fees, semi-privates in top 20 MSAs, municipals, but they don't want to run them. They just want to buy up the land and keep the green space. And then it's destination golf. And that's why, you know, I really fortunate to thank you for hopping on, David, because definitely, we've been talking about destination golf. Is you've seen it ever since COVID. People want to hop in a car and just be able to drive with their buddies, and it's the Great American Golf Road Trip again.
Yeah. And Alan, I'll say, you know, one thing about this preview play, which I think Cabot does really well, is we listen to people, right? I mean, this preview play is about getting feedback, and we literally are watching, how do people want to use the property, right? Where do they want to stand? Where do they want to go park their car? Where do they want to hang out? What do they want to wear? We don't have a dress. I mean, we don't care. I mean, you know, whatever you want to be, we see it, and we see them how it plays out with the guests. And then we go, oh, you know what? That's where they want to go. That's where they want to hang out. That's what they see this course as. And that to me is amazing. Cause you know, like you said, those private country clubs or those other clubs, sometimes they're just so strict and so standardized that there's just no way of breaking that mold. And it's really cool to be able to look and see how people use the property, then react to it and provide just a little bit more to give them, right? That's even better. And that's, I think, another little piece of it that makes it work.
Without question.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I said it before. David, go ahead.
Sorry. David, how much easier is it to get to Cabot in Florida compared to Cape Breton? You know, does that...
Well, let's put it this way.
How does it play into the next ones?
You're a native Mainer. You tell us, Si.
All I know is that if Cape Breton is as successful as it has been in that location, mm-hmm. Yeah, we have no excuse here just outside of Tampa, right? So, no, it's interesting. I think that, you know, the answer is people will travel to what we just talked about, right? If you get it right and you make it unique and you make it different. And I think that's, you know, people haven't seen this side of Florida. You know, people are used to East Coast Florida. This is a totally different feeling, totally different vibe. And it's, I think people, when they realize what this is all about, I think are going to go, wow, you know, this is something that I haven't seen before in the Florida landscape and the temperature that is Florida. Right. So, but yeah, it always amazes me, man, people going up to Cape Breton is, that's a trek. But that golf's worth it too. I mean, that's that's as good as it gets up there.
I mean, you're pretty much in Iceland.
For real. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as Ben said, it was. What does he say? I think he said it's like a 10-year overnight success or something. I mean, it's. I mean, think about him. I mean, he went and acquired 60 different parcels of land from individual homeowners in a defunct mine community, and told them he was going to build world class golf in the middle of nowhere. You know, Mike Kaiser. It was like, he's like, oh, you know, what do you think, Mike? You know, and Mike's like, I'm not sure. And Ben just kept at it and kept at it and kept at it. And there you go. That's the vision. That's unbelievable what that story is all about. So kudos to Ben for what he's done.
Without question. I'm scheduling a trip, B.
Oh, we're
you guys. Yeah. I think this is a foursome right here. Let's go play. There's four of us. Let's
we, go. Will record, we will record the next show from the fire pits.
There you go.
Yes. Now you're talking.
And I'd like pepperoni, by the way, in the food truck.
All right, done. We have it.
Hey, you know who's scheduling a trip, B? Lydia Ko. Lydia Ko, right. Maybe to the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
But here's the question. Here's the question for you. She's this close to qualifying for the Hall of Fame at age 26, I might add. Yep. And there's reports and rumors that she may walk away from the game. You're right there in Orlando.
Yeah, we've talked about this off and on throughout, you know, the last year or so, of how the dynamics for a LPGA Tour player are much, much different than the guys on the PGA Tour who have the Champions Tour to look forward to. And, you know, women tend to want to have families and settle down. And so the career span is much, much shorter. But with that said, I really was surprised and taken back when she started talking about potentially hanging it up here soon. But to get back to the Hall of Fame thing, I mean, you just kind of knew when she came onto the scene as a teenager that she was going to be a Hall of Famer. Even through all the ups and downs when she was working with Ledbetter, and then she was with Sean Foley, and she's a grinder and she just figures stuff out. And, you know, that seems to be the recipe for LPGA Tour stars, is this finding themselves several different times and making it work. And I'm a huge fan of Lydia, for sure.
It lives right over there in Nona.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Hey, we're gonna bounce to the other topic real quick, which is did you see any one of you? Did you see the? So I mentioned in the opening monologue, Anthony Kim. Actually, David, this one's for you, because we talked to you. You mentioned about back when we played, and I'm even older than you. We won't get into that, but Anthony Kim doesn't know how to use a TrackMan.
Well, hold on. Andy doesn't tie his shoes. Did you see that? I mean, the guy's playing No shoes tied.
Where's he been for 10 years?
I don't know. Has this guy even played golf, is the question, right? Like, this is unbelievable. I mean, he looks like he just discovered golf again. And he's, you know, I mean, no shoes tied.
Yeah.
They said no fit, you know, clubs aren't fitted. No track, man. I mean, at first I was like, oh, this is a dud. Then he shoots 65. Yeah, okay. Can he do it again? Yeah. You know, like, is this going to be sustainable? I don't know. I wish it was not on live. I wish I was able to see it more often, but I mean, I don't know. Unbelievable.
And there was the white t-shirt was what I picked up last tournament in the first practice round. We did a Dave and Cy. We did an over under. So, Alan, what was the over under? 75.
Why do you keep bringing up the fact
because you owe us money still.
I just tried to.
Wait, what was it on his first round? Over under 75.
First round.
What was the whole week?
No, well, I think there was a 2-part bet.
Okay.
Andy Heidorn, our other co-host, said 76 or greater first round. And finished in DFL.
Yeah, okay.
And I was saying no. I mean, Anthony Kim, legendary, 12 birdies, money game in Vegas, gonna get it done. Yeah. He wasn't gonna certainly step on there with like a white t-shirt and terry cloth gym shorts. Should have taken that bet.
No, I know. I mean, my God. Yeah, that was like if that person walked up to you at your club, man. I mean, you'd be like, what?
You look like he's been hibernating for the last 12 years.
Yeah.
Did you see any of that out of Bay Hill?
I didn't see any players in a t-shirt.
What do you think Mr. Palmer, what would Mr. Palmer have thought of that?
Oh my god.
Kick him out. Yeah, but it was insane that, you know, as bad as he looked last week, he said at the end of the last interview, after finishing up, that there was some good that he could take from it into the next tournament. I'm like, yeah, right. And to shoot 65 on the final round, I don't know. I don't know if it was a fluke, or I don't know if it's a sign of things to come. I would probably say the latter, though.
So since I'm not a regular on this, I'll throw this bet at you guys. Over under on when you see Anthony Kim in a major. Does it ever happen again? I'll put it at 0.5 or one. Does he ever get in a major? I mean, you'd have to, at this point, get an exemption, or you'd have to qualify, right?
US Open or Open. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll be very curious to see. I'd love to see it.
Well, you know, that goes back to our whole question about, you know, the insurance policy with Lloyd's of London.
Yeah.
From what we heard, it's explicitly said not playing the European Tour, the PGA Tour, the Asian Tour, what have you. Never mentioned LIV. So yeah, $7.5 million little bump that he got just to show up in his terry cloth shorts and white t-shirt. But I wonder if the US Open or any of the majors are spelled out in there, that subclause section 3.
Well, I did read a little bit more into it, and there were some reports that LIV was taking care of whatever they were covering, whatever the insurance policy was going to be.
Interesting.
So at this point, he could be free and clear to jump into a US Open qualifier or Open championship or something. Who knows?
I'd like to see it.
I'd love to see it.
Stuff of golfing lore. It would definitely put him on the hot seat, BE.
That's right. And we got it. We got double hot seat. We didn't even tell the boys about this.
We're walking them right into the buzzsaw on this one.
So the hot seat is rapid fire questions, back nine. And we do have a bonus question at the end. So we'll just go back and forth. We'll start with Cy. Your lowest round ever.
This is going to be disappointing for you guys. I literally think it was in high school, like 78 in like a championship match. Like,
you saved that's it the best that. I've got. That's good.
Yeah.
David?
62.
Nice.
Jeez.
David can golf his ball.
Yes, he can.
Wow. Yeah.
Cy, your favorite three courses that you played.
How about three courses that I photographed?
Oh, there you go.
We'll do that. Yeah.
I haven't played much in a while. I love everything in Banff, Canada. Photographed a few courses out there, and then Pebble Beach, and I'll throw my home course of Biddeford Saco Country Club in Maine into the mix.
Yes.
David.
Spent years out there.
I love that. I'm going to go local too. Country Club of Vermont. That's a local one. I'm going to go, my favorite is Cypress. Got to play that. That's top for me. And then I'm going to throw Cabot in there. Cabot Carew.
Nice.
Cabot Citrus Farms.
So
company man right here.
Your top three that you have not taken photos of that you would like to, since we're doing that route with you.
Oh.
Really put me on the hot seat.
It's the hot seat.
Or play, since it's a haven't yet. You could say play.
Yeah, boy, I'd love to check out those Cabot properties.
Throw this one over to David. Let David go first on this one.
Okay. Yeah. Come on, Alan. I was liking this buffer.
You're giving him a chance to think, BE.
All right. So it's the top three that
I have not played. Yep.
All right. I've walked and caddied in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am multiple times and never played Pebble Beach. Okay. So I'm throwing Pebble Beach up there. I would say St. Lucia in Cabot World. That just the property looks incredible. So I got to get myself down there to play that one. And then I would say, you know, why would it not be Augusta National?
True.
I mean, come on. I mean, that's got to be a bucket.
Si?
I will lead with Augusta National. And then I'll skip over Maine and go to Cape Breton.
Yes.
Then maybe, I like this. And then what about somewhere down in Australia? Is it Ida? Help me out. There's a couple of crazy cliff. They go back and forth. I've seen crazy photos. It's gorgeous. I'll figure it out.
I think he's making a course up, but it sounds cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's an AI course.
David, top three golfers in no particular order of best of all time.
Best of all time. Tiger Woods. I hate to say this, but I like watching Greg Norman. I don't know if he's best of all time. Well, are you going best of all time or my favorites?
Your top three.
Of all time. Okay. I'll go. Well, then that's going to be Tiger. I mean, I don't even know about Jack because I wasn't around, but we got to throw Jack in there. And then you got to throw, let's throw Ben Hogan in.
There you go. Sigh.
How about Jack, who I am photographing tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m.
Love it. Ooh, boom.
Like the plug, by the way.
Like that? Tiger, and how about a fan favorite of Arnold Palmer?
Yes.
Now, this is a little different question. Who is the best golfer of all time, in your opinion?
I mean, Tiger Woods.
Tiger, Si?
Yeah.
It's up for debate, right? Like, you guys always count majors, you know? Ooh. Is it Tiger or Jack? I'll ask him tomorrow.
he'll tell you. David, best part of your game?
Putting.
Si?
Driving the ball.
Okay. What is the most important part of the game? One singular thing, most important part of the game in order to be a good player?
Self-belief.
Love it. Yep.
So regardless of what you swing or how you hit it, if you believe in what you're doing.
Yep. We've heard that one before. And I might have said that. I might have said that in my.
Oh, I love it.
Si?
I love David's answer. That would be my answer also, but I'll just say chipping. Okay. Mostly because I'm terrible at it.
Your best shot ever, time, place, situation.
Last hole, the Vermont Amateur Championship, over a bunker, short-sided pin, full flop shot, 60 degrees straight in the air, flew straight into the bottom of the hole, popped out of the hole under the lip of the up of the cup.
Oh. Nice.
So that was I don't know what year that was. That was a long time
ago. That's good.
Yeah.
My one and only hole in one at Deer Island in Florida during a scramble 15 years ago. My playing partners may have been a little liquored up. One of them jumped into the lake right next to the tee.
That's awesome.
My favorite
that's
shot.
That's why we got to have this next show at the fire pits.
That's dangerous. Yes. There's a lot of gators out there.
No water.
So yeah, that'll get into the last question. You've already answered, Si. How many hole in ones? So you had one. David, how many hole in ones?
You got. There's no good way to answer this. I put it as like if you went to Harvard, what do you say? I've had 10.
Wow.
Wow.
Is that leading?
Any way you say that, you're asked, you know, like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but it's, you can't say, you ask the question, but it's like when you go to Harvard, did you go to a school in Boston? Did you like,
I think of all show guests, you may be numero uno right now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No, it's been a little while since the last one.
And our 19th hole bonus question, Who do you like this week at the Players?
Oh, Cy, your turn. I gotta think,
man. When I like to make predictions like this, I just look at the last 2-3 weeks,
right.
Top 10, who's firing on all cylinders, who's hungry for it. Is it possible to say like the top 10 at Bay Hill, someone will win that didn't win Bay Hill?
I like that. So let's go. I'm going to throw one in there for you. Let's say
Shane Lowry.
I like that because Lowry has played well at TPC. So that could be a good pick.
All right. Hot hand, number one player in the world. When he wins in bunches.
Yep.
Defending champion, Scottie Scheffler. I mean, that's boring, but it's logical.
Yep. I agree. He's going to go on a tear. I see that.
He's going to go on a tear. I see it. I see maybe 2-3-4 wins in a row coming.
AD?
I already want Lowry.
Oh, you want Lowry.
I'm
going to agree with David. I think it's Scottie's back. All he needed was confidence in the short stick, and it's definitely there now.
Yeah. Ball striking around there. That's where I went to college, so I played there a lot, and self-confidence is important there. Yeah. Nobody more self-confident right now than he.
All right, boys, you have survived the hot seat.
Well done.
All right, we always come down to the 18th hole. Final thoughts. Before we do that, though, I'm going to want to give both of you the opportunity. How do they contact either one of you if you want to make a trip down to Cabot Citrus Farms, or if you are looking for photography? Because I've seen some of your work, Si. I was stalking your website earlier. It's some impressive stuff.
Thank you,
David. Go first.
Yeah, so you got to go on CabotCitrusFarms.com. That's the best way to do it. Get on that wait list. We'll be rolling out tea time soon. If you contact me directly, I'm not going to give you my info because that's going to get bombarded. Let's just put it this way. You boys contact me whenever you need to be squeezed in, because that's what I can do. We do 15-minute tea times right now, which leaves me a little room to squeeze. But no, CabotFarms.com, and check that out. And we appreciate you having us and having myself. This is this has been really fun, and thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Cy?
My work is at cysear.com, which is cycyr.com. That's my full name. Thank you guys for having me on.
Wow.
Thanks for coming in out of the bullpen, man.
Yeah, we pulled you in at the last minute. We had to go to the bullpen.
Thank you.
RB, final thoughts.
So final thoughts. I had it as my final thought last show when we had Joe Hallett on. I love Bay Hill, and I'm going to say it again. I'm going to piggyback off of my last show's final thoughts. But I got to really think about Bay Hill and Mr. Palmer as I wrote a couple articles about my experiences there. I had the opportunity to meet Arnie on 4 occasions. The first one was by sheer coincidence. It was our section annual meeting at Bay Hill, and he was being inducted that night into the Section Hall of Fame. And I parked the car for the meetings early in the morning, checking my tie in the mirror, and then I look outside the front window, and there he is right in front of my car walking his dog. So I got out, and he was waiting for me. He saw me fixing my tie, and we chatted for about, I don't know, 10-12 minutes, and it was just surreal. And I saw him again that evening with my wife at the Hall of Fame dinner, and he talked to us for a little bit. And, you know, he's just an incredible person. Bay Hill is an incredible place. I mean, the feels that you get there, for me, and I wrote about this, it reminds me of, you know, the comfortableness, the hospitality that I found in a lot of the courses that I played up growing up in upstate New York. And I'm sure a lot of you guys can kind of relate to a lot of the stuff we played as kids up in that part of the country. And that's sort of what I feel when I go to Bay Hill. So again, Bay Hill's awesome. The tournament was awesome. And that's my final thoughts.
Sai, final thought?
Yeah, Bay Hill was awesome. I also got to meet Mr. Palmer a few times, photographed him a few times. Just a great place, great people there, great people associated with the brand and his name and his legacy. Looking forward to photographing the players this week.
Nice.
And then getting back to Orlando and getting home. And thank you guys again for having me on.
Absolutely. David?
Yeah, no, I'm excited for life right now. I mean, we've got this property growing and I'm pretty excited about what's happening, and players is going to be great. I got to be honest. Like I said, I went to school down there at the University of North Florida and got to play TPC Sawgrass, was our home track, which was unbelievable. So I love that place. I think it's really unique and different. And I'm excited to watch it. There's very few tournaments that right now I'm getting jacked up about. I think this one's pretty cool.
Mine is, BE knows this, I'm a numbers guy. I do a lot of different, wear a lot of different hats in the business, and I love to watch the stats coming out of NGF. And I'm going to be very, be rough when I say there's about 37 million golfers in the game right now, on course, off course, hybrid. But as of 4:45 this morning, we have 37 million and one. Mm-hmm. Grayson DePugh. 6 pounds, 10 ounces. My first grandchild, son of my oldest son.
Yeah, so yeah, right on.
We are growing the game organically.
Nice.
Panelists, thank you as always. Listeners, thank you. Appreciate you listening to us, and we will catch you next week.
You only have one opportunity to sell your golf property. Shouldn't you partner with an expert that offers you 30 plus years of golf industry experience combined with the reach of a global leader in real estate? Colliers International Golf Brokerage and Advisory Services understands your unique business needs. Whether it is brokerage, management, and consulting, be reassured that the market leader in the business of golf is providing you the real answers and practical solutions you deserve. Contact Golf Talk Live co-host and Colliers Golf Advisory Services member Alan DePugh today at 717-554-8519. That's 717-554-8519.